Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are currently looking at the material outside of Scripture, the historical material, that comes between the Old and the New Testaments. We're depending heavily upon 1st and 2nd Maccabees and the writings of Josephus, the first century Jewish historian. We are focused right now at the beginning of the independent Hasmonean kingdom. That is a Jewish kingdom of the 2nd and 1st centuries BC. We know that that kingdom got its start in 142 BC when the high priest Simon, who was a brother of Judas Maccabee, was declared the ethnarch of the Jewish people and accepted as the independent leader of the Jewish people by the Greek Macedonian Greek Empire of Syria, that is the Seleucid Empire. 1 Maccabees chapter 14 begins with a eulogy or a high speaking, a good speaking about this Simon the high priest. And I think it would be beneficial for us to read what the Jewish people writing 1 Maccabees thought about this man. So it says in chapter 14, verse 4, "The land had rest all the days of Simon. He sought the good of his nation. His rule was pleasing to them, as was the honor shown him all his days. To crown all his honors, he took Joppa for a harbor and opened a way to the isles of the sea. He extended the borders of his nation and gained full control of the country. He gathered a host of captives. He ruled over Gazara and Beth-Zur and the citadel." Gazara would be Gaza. "And the citadel is the fortress north and slightly west of the Temple Mount, what would eventually become the Tower of Antonia." So that's very important that they control that, because that is the guard of the Temple Mount. Back to the text. "And he removed its uncleanness from it, and there was none to oppose him. They tilled their land in peace, and the ground gave its increase, and the trees of the plains their fruit. Old men sat in the streets. They all talked together of good things, and the youths put on splendid military attire. He supplied the towns with food and furnished them with the means of defense until his renown spread to the ends of the earth. He established peace in the land, and Israel rejoiced with great joy. Now, all the people sat under their own vines and fig trees, and there was none to make them afraid." Let me break in again. That phrase, sitting under their own vines and then under their own fig trees, that's a euphemism, an Old Testament idiom for being completely at peace and under prosperity. And so that's the description we're trying to be told about under the leadership of this John, or underneath the leadership of this Simon the high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. Back to the text again. "No one was left in the land to fight them. The kings were crushed in those days. He gave help to all the humble among his people. He sought out the law and did away with all the renegades and outlaws." That's a reference to the Jews that weren't living according to the law. "He made the sanctuary glorious and added the vessels of the sanctuary." So that's all in 142 BC when he comes to power functions as the high priest and ethnarch of the Jews for the next 8 years or so. So from 142 to 138 BC. And we know from the historical record that the Romans and the Spartans communicated their regret to Simon about the death of his brother Jonathan, And they extended at that time the offer to renew this treaty between these peoples and the Jewish people. And so we see once again that there was a treaty of friendship between the Romans and the Jews. And then in the sixth month of that particular Jewish year, the Jews posted a plaque in the honor of Simon. And I think I read this last time, but let me read it again from 1 Maccabees 14:41. The Jews and their priests have resolved that Simon should be their leader and high priest forever, until a trustworthy prophet should arise, that he should be governor over them, and that he should take charge of the sanctuary and appoint officials over its tasks and over the country and the weapons and the strongholds, and that he should take charge of the sanctuary, and that he should be obeyed by all, and that all contracts in the country should be written in his name, that is, him as ethnarch, and that he should be clothed in purple and wear gold. That's very much a king treatment, isn't it, in this time period in this part of the world. Continuing, none of the people or priests shall be permitted to nullify any of these decisions or to oppose what he says or to convene an assembly in the country without his permission or to be clothed in purple or put on a gold buckler. So again, this sounds very much like he is the king of the Jews, even though that exact term is not yet being used for this position at the head of the Hasmonean dynasty. And then finishing, whoever acts contrary to these decisions or rejects any of them shall be liable to punishment. And so we move into his kingdom now, which we already know has been very prosperous for the people. And we find out that the Greeks are trying to interact appropriately with this independent kingdom, and that the new leader in Greek Syria, a man by the name of Antiochus the VII, he writes to Simon this letter. And this is from 1 Maccabees 15, starting at verse 2. King Antiochus, to Simon the high priest, an ethnarch, and to the nation of the Jews, greetings. Whereas certain scoundrels have gained control of the country or the kingdom of our ancestors, and I intend to lay claim to the kingdom so that I may restore it as formerly was, and have recruited a host of mercenary troops and have equipped warships, and intend to make a landing in the country so that I may proceed against those who have destroyed our country and those who have devastated many cities in my kingdom. So this guy is basically saying, look, things are messed up here, and I'm going to fix it. And then he gets to the point. Now, therefore, I confirm to you all the tax remission that the kings before me have granted you, and a release from all the other payments for which they have released you. I permit you to mint your own coinage as money for your country, and I grant freedom to Jerusalem and the sanctuary. So what he's actually doing is affirming what had already been done by his predecessor, his brother, a couple of years earlier. Continuing, all the weapons that you prepared and the strongholds that you've built and now hold shall remain yours. Every debt you owe to the royal treasury and any such future debt shall be canceled for you from henceforth and for all time. And when we gain control of our kingdom, we will bestow great honor on you and your nation and the temple so that your glory will become manifest in all the earth. And then that ends the quote, and it ends the letter. So as we can see now, the independent Jewish kingdom is being taken seriously, even by new leaders in Macedonian Syria. But once Antiochus starts having some thoughts in his head that maybe, just maybe, he can be powerful enough to reassert Macedonian control over the Jewish people, he starts threatening the kingdom as well. This is, again, in chapter 15 of 1 Maccabees, probably just a few months later, where he says, "You hold control of Joppa and Gazara and the citadel in Jerusalem. They are cities of my kingdom. You've devastated their territory. You've done great damage in the land. You've taken possession of many places in my kingdom. Now then, hand over the cities that you've seized and the tribute money of the places you've conquered outside the borders of Judea, or else pay me 500 talents of silver for the destruction that you've caused and 500 talents more for the tribute money of the cities. Otherwise, we will come and make war on you." Now, Simon tries to come to some sort of peaceful arrangement with Antiochus VII, starting in the next year, 137 BC probably. And because Simon is fairly old, because remember, he was one of the original brothers that was involved in the resistance movement back in the 170s. And so now we're down in the 130s. So because he's fairly old now, he gave his two oldest sons, Judas, named after his brother probably, and John, the responsibility for defending Judea, which apparently they accomplished with great excellence. And then in 134 BC, one of Simon's daughters was married off to a man by the name of Ptolemy Bar-Ababus, who happened to be governing the plain of Jericho down in the Jordan Valley. This Ptolemy apparently wanted even more power than what he already had, so he invites his in-laws to a special banquet during which he actually kills the high priest Simon, Ethnarch Simon, and his wife, and their two older sons, the ones that I was talking about a while ago, defending Judea. He captures them and makes them into hostages. And then this Ptolemy reaches out to Antiochus VII in order to make a deal that Ptolemy himself could become the next governor of the entire Judea area underneath Antiochus VII. Now, he also dispatched some of his agents to track down and kill another of Simon's sons, a man by the name of Hyrcanus, or as he sometimes referred to, John Hyrcanus. Now, this Hyrcanus was able to escape Ptolemy's men. He goes to Jerusalem, where the people there hail him as the new high priest and ethnarch of the Hasmonean kingdom. And so now we've come to a new leader of the independent Jewish nation. Hyrcanus immediately besieges Ptolemy in his fortress at Dagon, down in the valley. But he hesitates to really press this siege when Ptolemy brings his mom, who was not killed. I think I misspoke that a while ago. His mom and his two hostage brothers out onto the wall and begins torturing them in front of Hyrcanus, and threatens to throw them off the wall. Now, let me read to you from Josephus's historical account about this. It says, this is from Antiquities, book 13. "However, his mother spread out her hands and begged of him that he would not grow remiss on her account, but indulge his indignation as much the more, and that he would do his utmost to take the place quickly in order to get their enemy under his power, and then to avenge upon him what he'd done to those who were dearest to himself, for that death would be to her sweet, though with torment, if that enemy of theirs might be brought for punishment to punishment for his wicked dealings to them. So mom, even under torture, is screaming down to her son Hyrcanus, "Don't let up the siege. Avenge your father. Avenge me and your brothers." And so, encouraged by all that, Hyrcanus resumed his attacks, and Ptolemy kept his threats. He killed his hostages, and then he realized that he was never going to be able to hold out against the siege. So he slips out of the fortress and escapes the country. And so that's the way that John Hyrcanus begins his reign in 134 BC. Now, he immediately starts asserting his control, not just of Judea, against his neighbors to the north, the Macedonian, Greek, Syrian kingdom, but he actually tries to start expanding the Jewish kingdom to its oldest borders. So in about 130 BC, maybe 129 BC, after King Antiochus VII had died in battle, Hyrcanus decides to take advantage of this power vacuum that's suddenly there in the region to invade other areas and make them Jewish. So he pushes north into Samaria and makes that Jewish territory. Then he pushes east across the Jordan River into the place called Perea and makes that Jewish territory. Then he pushes south into Idumea. The Edomites had been pushed out of their historical territory into southern Judah, and so that became known as Idumea. So John Hyrcanus actually pushes into that region and tells the displaced Edomites, or as we know them better, the Idumeans, that they have no other choice but to accept his governance over them, and that they needed to become Jewish. That is, they needed to keep the kosher laws, they needed to keep the Mosaic law, they needed to keep the Sabbath, the festivals, circumcision, all of that, which apparently the majority of them agreed to. Otherwise, they would have been killed. Now, this is important because at this time, the family of the not yet born Herod the Great converted to Judaism. So when Herod was eventually born, he was born into a practicing Jewish family. So even though his ethnicity was Edomite or Idumean, his religion was the religion of the Jewish people. And so that is one of the reasons that he is treated as a Jew by everyone around him. Now, some other things that happened during this expansion phase under John Hyrcanus is that when he went into Samaria with his soldiers, they decided that part of their purge of the region was to destroy the 200-year-old Samaritan temple on Mount Gerizim. And so this is one of the reasons for heightened animosity moving forward between the Samaritans and the Jews. Now, one other thing happens. John Hyrcanus renews the mutual assistance treaty with Rome because this helped him in his resistance of his northern neighbor, the Seleucid Empire, because the Romans were looking for strong allies to help them counter the Seleucid Empire as the Romans continued to move their interests farther and farther east in the Mediterranean basin. Hyrcanus then enjoys a good long period of peace right down to 104 BC when he finally dies. Now, when he dies, his original intention was that his wife would administer the kingdom after him. Apparently, he was not all that convinced that his sons would do a good job at this. And the history of what happens next kind of bears that concern out. Because as soon as dad was dead, his eldest son, Aristobulus I, immediately puts on the royal diadem, that is the little ribbon around the head that indicates royalty. And he effectively declares himself king of the Jews. And he is the first one of this family line that does that. Remember, at this point, we'd had high priest, then we joined ethnarch to the title. But now, this guy decides, I'm king of the Jews. He imprisons his three younger brothers, or his three youngest brothers, I should say. But he treated brother number two, a man by the name of Antigonus, as if he were his equal in the kingdom, because he was his favorite brother. Now, when mom, who remember was supposed to have been the one exercising authority, when she objects to all this, Aristobulus, her son, has her imprisoned and eventually starves her to death. Now, if you haven't figured it out, you can see that there's very little religiosity, very little Judaism in this man's heart, because that has become secondary over time in this kingdom now. Under this Aristobulus, further expansion happens. Galilee is absorbed into this growing Jewish kingdom. Iturea, which is the area north of the Sea of Galilee, it's absorbed into the Hasmonean kingdom. And people in those places are told by the troops invading their area, you have to become Jewish in your customs. You have to keep the law and the traditions in order to be part of this kingdom. Now, in the second year of his kingdom, Aristobulus was very ill, and he was tricked by his closest companions and his wife into believing that his favorite brother was plotting to kill him. And so what does he do? He murders his brother, Antigonus. And then not very long after that, Aristobulus also dies. And his widow, Salome Alexandra, she releases the other three brothers from custody, declares the oldest of them to be the new king. This is a man by the name of Alexander Janneus. And then in a weird twist, she becomes the wife of this new king. And so this is how Alexander Janneus, the second son of John Hyrcanus, becomes king in 103 BC. Now, Alexander has the same heart as the last two kings before him, and that is to expand the Jewish kingdom, to expand the Hasmonean kingdom even further. And so he starts doing this, depending heavily upon the Egyptian ruler Cleopatra III. Now, this expansion comes at a cost. A lot of Jewish people die in the process. And so many Jewish people are not very happy with Alexander's reign. And this is a report from Antiquities, Book 13. It says, as for Alexander, his own people were seditious against him. For at a festival, when they then celebrated, when he stood upon the altar and was going to sacrifice, because remember, he's also functioning as the high priest, the nation rose against him and pelted him with citrons, which they had in their hands. And the law of the Jews required that at the Feast of Tabernacle, everyone should have branches of palm trees and citron trees, which things we have elsewhere related. So they basically just used decorations to throw things at him to show that they didn't like him. They also reviled him as derived from a captive and so unworthy of his dignity and of sacrificing. Now, this goes back to an old rumor that his grandfather, Simon the high priest, had married someone that he shouldn't have married and had children by her. And that this made the whole line thereafter illegitimate. And the Sadducees in particular apparently really pushed this idea. Back to the history. At this, he was in a rage and slew of them about 6,000. He also built a partition wall of wood round the altar in the temple, as far as that partition within which it is only lawful for the priest to enter, and by this means he obstructed the multitude from coming at him. So he basically builds a barrier wall to keep this incident of having things thrown at him when he was acting as high priest from happening the next time he's trying to do this. Well, we've run out of time, but we're not yet done with talking about how bad this guy is. Come back tomorrow.